Yeah, 22 minutes after the hour, it's time to turn attention to Dr. Don Clark. Don joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist, a member of the board at Creation Moments, good friend of the station, and we enjoy conversations with Don just about every Tuesday morning. David Allen Putt is here, too. He's up there in East Dakota in the newsroom, the formerly a missile silo deep beneath the earth there, where he's protected against it's too bad that Senator Sinema didn't have a missile silo to go to instead of that ladies' room.
Really,
and I'm getting more concerned all the time that I'm glad I've got the silo.
Yeah. David engenders opposition, just visceral opposition. So, but Don, you're otherwise. You're a kind and gentle human being that raises grapes for a living now, and I really admire what you have established there in Garden Valley. But we want to go back to your biochemistry, your scientific roots today, because it's sort of a matter of science and sort of a matter of politics and sort of a matter of an old 19th century philosopher named George Friedrich Hegel. And his writings were part and parcel of the Communist Manifesto, and his thinking has apparently affected both left-wing and right-wing people for a long time. He made a statement once, and our story is going to veer around to global warming, but there's a statement here that I want to read to you. Now, I know a few words of German, but not these ones. So you translate this for me. Hegel is notorious for having said that if facts contradict theory, then umso schlimmer für die Fakten.
Pretty good.
Yeah, not too bad, huh?
No? Yeah, that's pretty good.
So what does it mean?
Well, fortunately, it's been translated for us in this article.
Oh, I should have read that, I suppose.
So much the worse for the facts.
Oh.
So you don't throw out the theory, you throw out the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that was his position, which, of course, Karl Marx, held on to. In other words, whatever your hypothesis is, if you find out that the experiment didn't pan out your hypothesis, we just throw out that experiment.
Hegel must have had a sense of humor, I figure. Probably a tongue-in-cheek statement from a philosopher. That's rare in itself.
Yeah, well, it might have been, but indeed, that's kind of the philosophy of the Communist Party. The Marxism and all of that. We really don't care about the facts. What we care about is the ideology and whatever we have to do in order to make the ideology go through.
That's why I say this is as much a political statement as it is a scientific statement. Now, in this respect, the body of the article, by the way, there's a link to it in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. It's on the Cornwall Alliance, which is a website that has to do with the environment and ecology and so forth. They're talking about global warming. And they're talking about what data has revealed to us about global warming and comparing it with what the computer models have said would happen. And there's a discrepancy, but the discrepancy goes to the root of a political argument, too. And Dave and I have talked about this a couple times, that it seems on the liberal side of the fence, facts and science really don't matter much. It's the theory that demands your loyalty at all costs. That is the top priority, the theory. And because somehow it's a theory, it's obviously right, must be connected to truth, even when scientific data says, no, that's not the way it works. And this applies also to COVID, because they keep saying, follow the science, when the science they're saying to follow does not support their argument. The same principle applies here when it comes to global warming. It's something that's called CAGW, Catastrophic Anthropogenic Global Warming. How's that for a mouthful?
Yes, it is quite a mouthful, but what it means, it is that, oh, my goodness, you know, according to the theories and according to the guesses and the computer models, we're headed for, you know, this planet's going to be burning up if man doesn't do something about CO2, because, you know, my goodness, we're going to have the green CO2, of course, is a greenhouse gas, so to speak. And from all of our models, it looks like, you know, temperatures are going to be rising, you know, astronomically.
Now tell us what a computer model is supposed to do. Why do we have computer models?
Well, I mean, you know, we predict a lot of different things. It's just, you know, another predictive model. The problem with mathematical models, of course, they're only as good as not only the data that you're inputting, which is historical data. In this case, historical data is pretty good because we have historical data back to 79, I believe, with regard to temperatures. And you have to make certain assumptions about what, in this case, as far as global warming, what is the contributing factors to global warming? Now, not all of the climate scientists, but those that are purporting that, oh, we're going to have a big problem here, AOC in 12 years, we're going to, you know, that's going to be the end of civilization as we know it. You know, they put a high value, interestingly enough, to carbon dioxide as causing global warming. So that is one of the
That's an assumption, correct? That goes into building the computer model. So some scientist or some group of scientists decides what factors are involved in causing the planet to warm. We'll build those into the computer model, so we'll look for specific data based upon the computer model and see how it matches the projection. Is that the basic process? So you start with an assumption of some kind.
Oh, yeah, you start with all kinds of assumptions in this case as far as the climate is concerned. But one of their major assumptions, of course, is that man-made CO2 is driving the climate. So if man-made CO2 is driving the climate, we make assumptions as to how much CO2 is building up in the atmosphere, and therefore how much the Earth is going to be warming based on the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. Well, it's been proven multiple times and continue to be proven that their projections are off. I mean, it's, you know, the Earth is not warming at the rate that they say it should be warming based on the amount of CO2. And so you have to ask your question, okay, why? And why aren't they adjusting their parameters to meet reality here? Why do they keep, beating the drum of, oh my goodness, we've got to have a carbon tax, and we've got to, you know, force people to drive electric cars and all of the other political and social political, ideas that have come about, because obviously the models are showing that the atmosphere is going to be heating up at a tremendous rate based on the amount of CO2. So we got to tamper the CO2. But, there's a statement in here by Richard Feynman. Now, Richard Feynman was a Nobel Prize winning physicist, not philosopher. He was a physicist and a very respected physicist. As a matter of fact, I had some of his. He taught a school, I believe it was in Stanford. He was a university professor, and his Feynman lectures were renowned as being. He took physics and broke it down into simpler terms that many, many people could understand it. And I had a set of his physics books, his kind of physics workbooks that I worked through when I was, in college. Not that you know, he was teaching me physics, but he was just such a great teacher as well as a physicist that, you know, he kind of nailed things for you and made them easier to understand. But there's a statement in here by him, and it says, "And generally, we look for a new law by the following process." So here's the process that we should use. Here's good scientific, process, the scientific method. He says, first we guess. Well, what's a guess? It's a hypothesis. So we guess, we think this is what's going to happen. And then he says, then we compute the consequences of the guess to see what would be implied if this law that we guessed is right. So we guess, we come up with a hypothesis, we build a model, we compute the results, and then, he says, we compare the results of the computation to nature, that is, with some experiment or experience, and compare it directly with the observation to see if it works. And so if it works, well, okay, your guess must have been right. And it would then warrant to look into it further, because I guess a hypothesis doesn't become a theory until you've proved it against and compared it to observation over and over again. If it disagrees with the experiment, it is wrong. And so in this case, you know, all of the models, the atmospheric models that they're developing, are wrong.
And I should mention at this point, too, that the title of the article is Don't Lose Sleep Over the Latest UN Climate Report, because there was a report just recently released, end of September, and the computer models they're referring to have been developed. There are some 30 different computer models developed by various nations in response to this appeal from the UN to let's solve this problem. Let's find out what's going to happen. And of the 30 models, all but one have been wrong every time. The one model, and this is not from this article, but I know this from elsewhere, the one model that holds true is the one that the Russians developed. And it has predicted what is actually, its predictions reflect or agree with what actual observation is, in which temperatures are not rising near as fast. I mean, like, they're off by like 95%. These other 29 computer models. In fact, there may be more models than that now, but each of them typically devised by the scientific community of a particular country. So each of these models is the property of one nation state or another, including the U.S. But it seems like none of them hold water except for the one.
Yes, and they've been developing these models over, you know, over years. And the interesting thing is that the more recent models are worse than the older models. So they had a better guess with the older models than they do with the recent models. So I don't know exactly what they're doing as far as why the newer models aren't, they haven't adjusted them correctly. But the basic premise is that they're putting too much weight on carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide's effect on the atmosphere.
But apparently, I want to slip a point in there, too, because if carbon dioxide is a result of global warming rather than a cause, that turns everything inside out, does it not?
Well, it does. I mean, it does, because, instead of all of the carbon dioxide that we're producing, and how do you produce carbon dioxide? Well, of course, they will tell you, burning gasoline and burning fossil fuels is going to produce carbon dioxide. Well, yes, that's one of the byproducts. It also produces water in your combustion chamber. If you get complete burning from a hydrocarbon, then you get carbon dioxide in water. How do we mitigate the carbon dioxide? It's an easy thing to fix. Carbon dioxide is one of the easiest things to fix in the atmosphere, because all you need to do is plant more vegetation. plant more trees not so much in the United States anymore, because we're managing, we have been managing our forest, but in other countries where they've been clearing land and taking out the trees, well, that's going to have a greater effect on the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, because you've taken up the CO2 is like food to trees and to plants. So plants use, basic biology, uses carbon dioxide and fixes it and produces sugar from it. And we eat the sugar and we produce carbon dioxide. And we use oxygen, we breathe the oxygen. So the plants give us oxygen and take up the carbon dioxide, and we take up the we eat the sugars and breathe the oxygen, and we produce CO2 from it. So it's God created this cycle, and it was a perfect cycle as long as, you know, there is enough vegetation around. Hence the project, one of the projects in Israel, for example, is to plant trees. Because that's one way you turn a desert into a luscious garden, is by planting trees or planting vegetation, and you turn basically what was a desert into a very lush garden. Because once you plant, vegetation, then you get more absorption of the heat from the sun. And instead of that heat being reflected back into the atmosphere and heating up the atmosphere winds up cooling down, and then it starts to rain where it wasn't raining before. So there are much better ways of getting rid of the CO2 if you think the CO2 is the problem. But we know, for example, from experiments and from observation and from the data, that temperature leads CO2, by 800 years. You know, so there's a rise in CO2 after the temperature has risen, and there's not a direct correlation between the two. So, not a one-to-one correlation. So for every degree of temperature of the Earth, you need X millions of tons of CO2 in the atmosphere. It's not like that at all. So to rely so heavily on these models on CO2 is what's throwing everything off. And so the bottom line, of course, is that the models are projecting a catastrophe, but in reality, that's not happening, because the Earth is far more complex than that. And one of the greatest influences to our temperature is what's happening on the sun. So the more sunspots you have, the more sun eruptions you have at the surface of the sun, the more radiation being beamed to the Earth is going to have a far greater effect on the Earth's temperature than anything that man is doing for that matter. And so we should be looking at models that says it has a large input of the sun activity, and then perhaps our computer models might more accurately reflect what's happening here on Earth.
Except that politics enters into the situation here, and economics enters into the situation here, and I suspect that computer models are changed and modified with a particular philosophy in mind, that is a theory again, that has predominance over the facts. In other words, they have a case to prove. They'll change their model so that the case is supported.
Well, and the model that they, I mean, they, let's face it, these folks these days want to fundamentally transform America, and they want to fundamentally transform the world. So they are purporting that everybody's got to drive electric cars. Well, we know it takes more energy to build an electric car than a gasoline car would ever produce in its lifetime. Mm-hmm. So you've got the problem of creating, and not to mention the toxic minerals that are going into the batteries, of course, which China now has about 80% market share of those minerals like lithium and other things that make up these compact, very energy efficient batteries. You know, so we have gone from essentially an energy rich nation with our coal and our oil reserves, and we're saying, you know, let's just not be energy. Let's not use our energy reserves. Let's depend on other nations, and therefore we're going to increase the price, and we're going to give these other nations our wealth. So yes, it is. This is a political issue. Has nothing to do with the science, because the science, as I just explained, does not follow what their climate change models are. And so this is just another avenue for one political side. Or maybe more, you know, saying let's fundamentally change the world and make people completely dependent on big government and big business.
The article, too, makes a point about contradictions. It doesn't use the word contradictions. I'll explain that in just a minute. But they talk about feedbacks, which is what the data is. It's the data it's the temperature charts, it's winds, and it's moisture, and it's all the data they collect from observations on Earth, from scientific instruments, and from direct observation. But they say they assume the feedbacks, that especially clouds, are positive. That is, the people putting together these models, the proponents of global warming, they say that the clouds are positive. That is, they assume that if CO2 causes a little warming, water vapor and other contributors to greenhouse warming respond in a way that, on net, magnify that warming. But water vapor and clouds are the most important feedbacks, and empirical observation shows they are a negative feedback. In other words, they reduce warming.
They reduce temperature. I mean, anybody knows that. I mean, it doesn't take, you don't have to be a rocket scientist or a climate scientist to know that on a cloudy day, it's cooler than on a perfectly clear day. I mean, we experience that multiple times here in Texas.
So follow the science, but be honest about it. Really follow the science in this case and in all cases. There is an old philosophical saw that I learned about contradictions, and it goes something like this. In real life, a contradiction cannot exist. Simply cannot, will not, does not exist. So even if you're reading the Bible and you see something that appears to you to be a total contradiction, and it causes a question mark whether to believe or not to believe, if you see an apparent contradiction, the solution is to re-examine your premise. In other words, question the theory. Question the original thinking that led you in that direction, because, in fact, a contradiction does not exist in the real world. So I just wanted to pass that along. It really, really goes hand in glove with what this article is saying.
Right. And so we have a contradiction. I mean, in essence, the models are saying one thing, but in reality, we have something else. And so going back to, what Feynman basically said, hey, you know, if your experiment turns out to contradict the the theory or the guess, then guess what? Your guess is wrong. And so everything built on that must mean that it's wrong. So all of their assumptions and all of their, what they're trying to do is absolutely the wrong path to take.
So indeed, don't let that UN report on climate interrupt your sleep. Just don't worry about it. It's in bigger hands than ours, and it's being taken care of by what God planned for us. and executed beautifully during the creation, and the earth can care for itself. Yes, we are stewards. We have to pay attention and do the right thing. But global warming? Nah, not the case. Don, thank you so much. Don, again, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website to you. It's creationmoments.com. Lots of information there, both written and audio and video, that explains scientifically the biblical story of creation. It is very scientific, and you can't go wrong. Creationmoments.com, it's worth a visit. You can link to it for Broken Road Radio if you're listening there this morning. Don, thanks so much. Appreciate having you. And we learned something again today. Let's do it again in a week here, huh?
Yeah, hopefully. And, you know, we'll get back together again next week, I suppose.
Yes, look forward to it. David, you're pondering.
The stuff is there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the information's there. We just have to read it.
Don, have a great week. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Me too. So long.
See you, Don.